You're listening to the Transform Your Nutrition Podcast with your hosts, Rebecca Heald and Jeff Ash. Our purpose is to help individuals and families transform their relationships with food and develop healthy bodies, minds, and attitudes, all without restriction, guilt, or shame.
Afternoon, Jeff, or is it morning over there, isn't it?
Yeah, it's morning here, 7:45 in the morning here.
It's 1:45 here, nearly homeschool time. Well, yes, I'll be going to children soon. But anyway, so yes, today, I think we're going to talk about how we should focus on teaching food rather than the specifics of nutrition to our younger children.
Right. Yeah, I think this is a great topic to discuss, and it's interesting because I actually have a curriculum for kids and teens teaching nutrition, and so it'll be great to have this discussion of kind of the difference between modeling it and demonstrating good nutrition, good eating habits, good health seeking behaviors, those kinds of things, versus kind of a formal curriculum trying to teach nutrition principles. So I think this will be a great discussion today.
Yeah, I think so. So I think we've both got a bit of a background here, haven't we? Because obviously, like I said, you've just mentioned you've got your curriculum. And obviously, I am kind of a mother of two young boys, one who is still in the infants. So he's just turned 7. And so he's coming home with, you know, with they're obviously teaching nutrition at school, and he's been coming home with some of his homework, which I have to say, you know, I mean, the teachers are trying to do the best and they're doing a great job. I'm not saying that they're not, but I do think some of the things he's been coming home telling me and showing me are not necessarily how I would approach things, let's just say.
Yeah, well, and that's a good point to make too, there's a difference between kind of individual best practices approaches for nutrition, and then there's this public health messaging type of approach. Yeah. And it's really challenging to kind of figure out, okay, how do we put together a message to help the population with this sort of somewhat generic message of health, good nutrition, healthy eating, that kind of thing. And are there consequences to passing these sort of public health type messages, but also, this is a kind of something that'll be interesting to talk about too, is are teachers the best sources to be passing on information about nutrition? A teacher who has been thoroughly educated in teaching math, science, history, techniques around that, but they don't have the nutrition education background that you and I do, where we spend hundreds of hours specifically on nutrition. I mean, even doctors, we know that they spend very minimal amount of time learning about nutrition, and often people look to them for nutritional guidance. And so anyway, that would be another topic, but kind of what are some of the examples that you have seen that have come home from school that were either concerning or you had you kind of looking, I don't understand that.
Yeah, there's a couple of things there. And I just wanted to go back to the thing, what you said about teachers. And I think that's a really cool point that you made there. And it's funny, actually, because a few people have said to me, especially my childminder, she said, you know, you really need to go into school and offer to do some stuff. And I'm like, it's on my list. It's on my list.
Yes.
I think the other thing is, it's not just about, like you say, not necessarily having the nutritional awareness. It's about also understanding and teachers understanding just how powerful that their messaging is, yet how entrenched in diet culture that it is.
Yes.
Because, for example, and this will lead me on to one of the examples that I had to face a few weeks ago, and it was Leo. I was making homemade burgers for dinner, and Leo waltzes in and he says, Mummy, I can't eat those burgers if you're going to fry them, because if you fry them, they're going to be unhealthy. Whereas if you put them in the oven, they're going to be healthy. And I was like, darling, where did you know, because we've been talking about it at school, and my teacher said, if you fry it, it's unhealthy, and if you don't, it is healthy. And, you know.
Yeah, that's a great example.
Yeah. So it's like, I'm having to unpick all of that, but this is exactly the example of teachers feel, they probably think that they are passing on the right messages, but all they're doing is attaching shame and confusion to food. you know, because if my, you know, if Leo suddenly thinks, well, a fried burger is bad for me, and if I eat it, I'm, you know, we've spoken about this before. We spoke about it in the last episode about if they're feeling that foods are good or bad or healthy and unhealthy, then all they're going to think is, all they're going to do is feel ashamed and guilty. It's where all the guilt and the shame comes from. And right. So I don't think you understand the power of that. And, you know, and how this is impacting on our children, on our teenagers, who then become adults and the next generation. That are,
yeah.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Ideas have consequences. And so I think if we don't understand what those consequences are for the words that we use, the concepts that we're promoting, then we can inadvertently cause these negative outcomes. And so, you know, you see this all the time where you see people focusing their attention on the minutiae rather yes. than the big picture items. So is it healthier, technically speaking, to cook a burger in the oven versus fry it? I don't know. That's kind of beside the point. The point is that it's not so drastically different that it's worth worrying about.
Exactly
it's like
that.
And I you kind of see this. Should a kid avoid, you know, should you focus on 93% lean ground beef or beef mince, as you guys would refer to it, versus 90%? Does it really matter to have them looking at labels at that degree? And I think sometimes it's easy for someone who maybe doesn't have a thorough understanding of nutrition and the kind of those concepts to focus on the wrong things. Or you may have your own bias personally. You may have, maybe you have a teacher who is paleo or keto, and they're going to be projecting that bias, that nutritional bias, onto the kids in the messaging that they present to them without understanding the consequences that could have on outcomes in those kids long term.
Absolutely. You know, we're not a house that ever talk about food in terms of healthy and unhealthy. You know, we don't talk mm-hmm. about foods in terms of good or bad. But it came up it was my son's birthday on last Saturday. And, you know, I had one of those unrestricted days with the treats and the sweets. They don't happen every day, but I think every now and then they're a good thing to do. Mm-hmm. Children will self-regulate afterwards, like I explained on my social media as well, how Leo, the next day, he knew he'd had enough the day before. And can I get my children to finish the chocolate cake now? Because they, you know, but anyway, just to, you know, they were talking to me about what was healthy and what wasn't healthy. And it's then really, really difficult as a parent, once those concepts are starting to kind of creep in, it's difficult to unpick them because, you know, I talk to them, it's like trying to say to the children, well, you know, that's not how it is. You know, some foods give you more energy. Some foods are more nutritionally dense. You know, some foods make you feel better, you know, in terms of what you can do, et cetera. I said, and other foods are, you know, more for fun, but trying to unpick that is really, really hard. Once you've already established a certain approach, does that make sense? So it's like, it is difficult. It's really, really difficult because, you know, and I've said this before that, you can establish what you want in your home, in your home environment. But as soon as children are then going out into the big wide world, you know, they're picking up other messages. So I think all we can do is try and make sure that our children are as robust and resilient when it comes to it. And I think one of the things that really has stood out for me as well with Leo is how obviously school are trying to teach him very black and white concepts when it comes to nutrition. Mm-hmm. I mean, he came home and he had a sheet that was telling him what was a protein, what was a carbohydrate, what was a dairy product. He came home telling me about red, green and amber food groups. Now, without going into too much detail, he was trying to explain these things to me. But as I was questioning more, well, what does that mean, Leo? And he just did not understand. And he then tried to put protein because he was trying to construct. He had a meal and he was trying to, you know, understand what the groups were on his plate. And I think it was, I don't know if I spoke to him about this before, but I think we had some meat, I can't remember what it was, maybe some chicken, and there was some vegetables and there was some potatoes. So it was a well-balanced meal. And he, because he couldn't understand how that fitted into the fruit, the red, green and amber category, he was then trying to put his protein, his meat, into the red category. And then he couldn't understand. Do you know what I mean? So it just,
yeah.
it just this abstract, at the end of the day, at that age, as children get older, yes, you know, mm-hmm. as children get older, then we can talk to them a little bit more about what a protein is and et cetera. But when they are so young, especially if they're an infant, even primary school, we should be teaching food. We shouldn't be teaching nutrition, if that makes sense. Because they don't understand, my children do not understand what protein means. They don't understand what carbohydrate means, but they do understand that the chicken on their plate came from a farm that came, and the chicken came from an egg. Yeah. And they understand that a farmer has been involved, and we should be teaching that. And they understand that we bought it in a supermarket, and, you know, and even when we did our podcast the other week and Leo was talking about fresh food, he was talking about food, wasn't he? And he was mm-hmm. talking about how sometimes frozen can be better because fresh food in a supermarket has often been on the shelf for a long time. I don't know if you remember.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's because they're the kind of things we talk about at home. We talk about the process. We talk about food. We don't talk about nutrition. We don't talk mm-hmm. about molecules and carbohydrates. We don't talk about it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And it's interesting too. There have been some studies where they looked at especially younger kids and how to get them to eat what we would consider healthy foods, vegetables, more fruits and vegetables, and to try different kinds of foods, which are our goals of us, or they should be as parents, is that we want to, I know both of us tend to approach it more from a positive rather than a negative. So we say, how do we get our kids to eat more of these things? Because these are the most beneficial to them and their health and developing bodies, versus what should we restrict from them? So it's just kind of that different way of looking at it and approaching it. And there's been some interesting studies where they find that exposing kids in the way that you described, through like books and stories and teaching them about where the food comes yeah. from and farms and videos yeah. in those kind of in that format, that has been shown to be very beneficial in getting kids to try new things, as opposed yeah. to teaching them about nutrition. So we're teaching them more about the very easy to understand concepts for kids, stories, pictures, how things are grown, all of those things, where they come from, getting them interested in those things. And then now they're more willing to try them. And they've had some good positive results in some research studies in those areas. And so I think that does support this idea of how we approach teaching foods and that kind of thing, exposing kids to foods.
Yeah. Well, we focus on here, you know, I've spoken about it before. I'm not the greatest, I've got to admit, grow fruit and vegetables. I seem to kill everything. But we do every year. We've got our veg patch, and every year we do get potatoes, we get spring onions, we get, you know, so, and they love that. I mean, you know, you've never seen anything like it when Luca pulls up his spring onions and then that's all he wants for his dinner. And right. I never got to try a spring onion before. Same with potatoes. My kids were really funny about potatoes once. Leo, and the one time that I managed to get him to eat potatoes and now he loves them was when he grew his own, you know. And it's the same, and we do that, and then obviously, as you know, I get them involved in cooking, so they love to mm-hmm. get involved in cooking. I get them right. involved in the shopping process, so getting them interested and involved, you know, like last Friday, you know, Leo, he wants to talk, Luca wants to come on again actually and talk about how he made his chocolate cake for his brother. Uh-huh. You know, getting them involved in all of that, that's fun. And that's yeah. when they want to try new things. And that's when they experiment. That's how I'm getting my children. And don't get me wrong, like I said to you before, you know, there was still that, like last night, I had a battle, not a battle, because I did say to him, he was having his dinner and he's like, Luca hardly touched his dinner. I made a beef stew, I think, last night, and Luca hardly touched it. And he's like, oh, don't want any more. I was like, and then he's, we had almost like a bit of a to-do about it. And I just said, I'm not arguing with you, Luca. I said, if you've finished, leave the table. That's fine. I said, but you know that this opportunity, this is your only eating. I did let him have his pudding. I did. Yeah. But I did say to him, if you go hungry now before bedtime, I said, then tough, you know? And that was it, you know?
Yeah.
So sorry, my point is that they're not always amazing eaters. You know, we still
well, yeah, days. Yeah, they're kids. even as adults, we aren't amazing eaters. I ate too many chocolate kisses yesterday.
Yeah, well, so. I've got to admit, I was talking to a client about this earlier because we were talking about, you know, obviously the whole like comfort eating because of lockdown and stuff has cropped in, and I've been doing it. You know, yeah. I have, but I recognize it and I know what's going on, and that's the mm-hmm. key.
Yeah,
recognizing and understanding and trusting your body is the key to a healthy relationship with food. Mm-hmm. And, you know, by telling children that things are, you know, unhealthy, healthy, you know, explaining things and demonizing things just makes them lose their trust in their bodies, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, one of the interesting things when you look at some of the research that has been done in the various programs that are implemented at sort of the population level, you know, like through schools and those kinds of things, is that those that seem to be most successful are those that get parent involvement as well. Yes. So much of the education system is our big government education system telling our kids what they need to understand and learn. They, you know, as parents, we send them off. We want our kids to come back educated, and there's sort of this disconnect between, in many cases, with the parents and the education system and what's going on with the kids. But I think the fact that we see these programs that involve the parents as well in the nutrition part of that, that those are the most successful. I think that underscores the importance of our job as parents to really model these behaviors and really go beyond just teaching about nutrition, but really making it a part of just everyday life conversations, how we model our own body image, our own attitudes around food, and all of those things as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I was reading as well about how, you know, the positive impact of having gardening at schools mm-hmm. as well, and how that encourages children to be more relaxed around food and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So I think, and that's the thing, planting, farming, food science, so teaching children how butter comes from cream, you know, that's what we should be focusing on. Not this worksheet that Leo brought home that told, you know, that was terrible pictures of what a protein, a dairy, you know, they just it really broke my heart, if I'm honest. And, you know, getting children to touch food, taste food, mm-hmm. you know, that's, I think, what we really need to be focusing on. And one of the other things as well was interesting about how, you know, in schools as well, how they can foster, you know, a good relationship with food is thinking about lunch times as well, mm-hmm. and creating relaxed, comfortable atmospheres, and not, you know, very often you'll get, you know, some of the dinner staff telling children that they cannot eat their dessert in their lunchbox. I mean, we've spoken about this before, haven't we, about how, you know, my kids can have whatever they want first in their lunchbox.
Right.
But some that, you know, in some schools, there will be pressure on the children. I've heard, you know, some of my friends have come home mm-hmm. and they've said, you know, they're not letting them eat the dessert in their lunchbox if they haven't finished their sandwich, or they're telling them they've got to eat them in a certain order. You know, right. All of this has been shown to have a negative impact on how children develop and grow when in terms of their relationship with food.
And I think that really underscores what we were talking about a little bit earlier, where it's well-meaning. I mean, I think
it is well-meaning.
Just to emphasize this is that teachers are typically very wonderful people they go into that profession because they love kids. They want to see them grow and develop and become all that they can possibly be and reach their potential and everything. But I think when you don't understand some of these concepts and the different consequences of certain ways of approaching these ideas, that it can be detrimental unknowingly and in that way. So you have, you know, again, you're focusing on what order should you eat your meal as opposed to enjoying it or trying new things or just letting the kids eat the lunch that was brought to them. You know, I've heard of cases where teachers or staff may get involved and may make comments about the meal that a child brings too in their lunch, which there's so many things that, you know, and it's well-meaning. They want that child to eat a healthy, nutritious lunch, but they don't understand necessarily what's going on in the home environment. And so that child may not have, you know, there may be economic factors involved where that child is fortunate to have a peanut butter sandwich every day. And if that's all that they can bring, now that you make a comment about that, hey, you should be bringing some fruit or you should be bringing some of this, they may not have that option at home. And now there's some guilt and shame, embarrassment put on that child.
Exactly that. Exactly mm-hmm. that. And I've seen, there's 2 points I want to make there, actually. Exactly that. And I've seen this even the peers, their peers, you know,
right.
at school as well, making comments, because I've seen that with Luca. You know, he loves hummus. So I sent it to school, but then he was getting comments from his peers as well about, but I know that's not quite the same as what you were saying, but I'm just saying other people, if obviously other children are picking up other messages from other adults. Does that make sense?
Right.
But I think, but the point I wanted to make about what you just said then is how involving parents, because okay, it might be, like you said, it might be economical. It might be mm-hmm. that the family don't have the opportunity to provide fresh fruit, etc. But there are things schools can do to help with that.
Right.
And, you know, and it could also be that parents are not educated enough, you know,
exactly.
that don't understand good nutrition. And like you said earlier, the research has shown that the more that parents are educated and get involved in these schemes, the better impact it has on our children's relationship with food. Mm-hmm. So, you know, schools could look at putting things like that in place. So getting people like us into schools to do workshop with parents so that we can educate, rather than, like you say, making comments that then just, you know, kind of instill the fear and the shame and the guilt. Because the other thing right. about that, like I mentioned this last time, is that if children think that their parents are giving them food that is unhealthy, then they might start, you know, that can lead to confusion. It can lead right. to issues over esteem, because they're like, well, my mummy loves me. Why are they giving me food that's not good? So we have to be so yeah. careful. We have to be so careful, because children interpret things very black and white, which is exactly why teaching them nutrition in that way, you know, teaching them the nuances of nutrition just doesn't work with their brains that aren't quite, I think it's not till they're 8 or 9, I think, even a bit older, yeah. you know, that their brains are cognitively developed to understand the nuances of things.
Right.
And there was something else I just wanted to pick up on then. It's kind of a little bit, but you mentioned about peanut butter, right? Now, the reason I'm bringing this up is Luca hates peanut butter. And I think there was something the other day, and I gave him something that had peanut butter on it. Because like I've said to you before, I keep offering, even though he doesn't like it right now, right. he might like it. Yeah. So uh-huh. I keep offering, but he can smell that stuff out. And he, there was something the day and I gave it and he went, yuck, that's disgusting. Now that is not acceptable. Now, what I just want to say is that when you're creating a relaxed atmosphere around school, and obviously I didn't, you know, but children yeah. should learn to, as I said to him, I said, no, Luca, that's not how we react. We politely say no, thank you, or I don't like that. Because children still need their limits and their boundaries.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah.
Before, where Leah will be somewhere and I go, oh, yuck. And I'm like, no, that is not. We say no, thank you, I don't like it, or I don't want to try that. You know, do you know what I mean? We have to encourage them to have the manners and be polite around food as well. So I know that's topic, but
yeah, and that's an important point with the division of responsibility that we talked about yeah. in the other session, was that's one of the aspects of that, is that we're to provide what, where, and when, but we're also to be trying to foster this attitude or this environment of developing appropriate social skills, appropriate manners, and dinner table etiquette and those kinds of things. That's part of the whole feeding process, because it is important that when you go to somebody's house for a meal, if they're serving you something that, you know, that you can tolerate, maybe it's not your favorite, you know, take a small serving to be polite. But at yeah. the same time, if it's something you really do not like for me, green beans, I don't care who serves them. I'm not going to eat them, but I'm also not going to say, oh, yuck, I hate green beans.
Exactly.
You know, you just, you either don't serve yourself some, or if somebody asks and they say, oh, would you like green beans? You say, no, thank you. You different things where you aren't drawing attention to it. So it's, you know, that would be another topic, but yeah, it's a
it
good point
be.
To make.
Sorry,
that.
It was just when you mentioned the peanut butter and it literally happened like yesterday, I think it was. But like you said, it's about the modeling though as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that is the division of responsibility completely. Mm-hmm. You know, it's about the modeling, the table etiquette, the manners and stuff, you know, definitely.
Yeah.
That's an ongoing, you know, because that is something that's just forever ongoing in check, you know, as our children grow and develop. Like right now I've got Leo who's constantly getting up and leaving the table and fidgeting all the time, you know, and I've got to like constantly, so, you know, I've got to be mindful. One thing I did, you know, really, really did, and I think this was, you know, when, not to get too, but we've had a lot going on in our personal lives, okay, and, you know, I left their dad a couple of years ago, and it was all quite difficult, let's say. So I must admit that I stopped sitting down as often. I mean, you know, obviously I was still preparing their meals, etc., and, you know, and but I didn't sit down and eat with them as much because, I, you know, I was very stressed, I was very anxious, there was a lot going on. Now, did I pick up on that. They, if ever I took them out for something to eat, they were just, their manners really were just questionable. Leo started eating his fingers again because I was so stressed at that point in my life.
Right.
I was feeding them, you know, it's not like I wasn't sitting with them, I wasn't modeling, I was just letting them get on with it. And at this point, they were only five and eight. So quite, you know, informative years.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, obviously we're back tonight. I mean, I don't sit down with them all the time for every meal. It's just not possible when you're a working mum and you're on your own. It's not possible anyway, you know, but majority of the time we do sit down at least once a day and have a meal together. And I just have to stress how important that has been in terms of making sure that my children do have manners at the table. Because when I wasn't doing that, boy, did we see it.
Well, and I think that kind of underscores and takes us back to what we were talking about, parent involvement in the education process. So we've talked some about the fact that we want to, that both of us think that, you know, modeling nutrition and approaching it in that way with kids is probably a more effective approach than teaching them about nutrition. Yeah. But it takes us back to that. If we're going to teach somebody about nutrition, it seems like it would make more sense to focus on the parents. Yeah. Because if we teach the parents about nutrition, they are cognitively at a level where they can better understand protein, fat, carbohydrate, fiber, those kinds of things. Then they can, you know, if we teach the kids about those concepts too, the parents can correct it. They can reinforce those ideas. They can talk about them as well. And in fact, they're the ones that can make changes in the food environment at home. For example, let's say they're sending their kid with a peanut butter and jelly sandwich every day to school, and they didn't realize that there would be some other options that are just as economical that would provide maybe some additional satiety for the child. Maybe the child's coming home really hungry all the time. The parent doesn't really understand certain concepts. And so those could be things that would be taught to the parents that could then trickle down into the kids as well. And so I think that seems to be an approach that sometimes the schools, I guess, and some schools do better than others. Some programs obviously do involve the parents, but I think that would be a really good area of focus when it comes to educating kids about nutrition is really just get the parents involved. And because the kids can't do anything that the parents aren't doing at home.
And the teachers.
Yeah.
And you know, and doing some work with the teachers as well to, you know, deconstruct some of the messages and, you know, and but I think the thing is that some of that is happening, but it's getting the right people in, Jeff. I mean, you know, I don't want to say, but, you know, I have seen that some schools are working on it, but are not necessarily getting people that are properly qualified, properly trained, do know enough in the area to actually do it justice, you know, and just because that's the other thing, you know, you've got to get people that know and understand to be able to do it effectively.
Right.
And one thing I did want to say before we do finish as well is that, you know, there is a point when it's, you know, children do get to a point where they can start to understand, you know.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Nutrition.
And, you know, a good way, like Luca is coming up to, he's going to be 10 soon. And I do think, you know, he's not quite ready, I don't think. We've had conversations about things because he picks up on stuff. But I do think soon, you know, when he's going up to secondary, I can start talking to him a little bit more. Because I've touched on it a little bit with him because, you know.
Right.
he's mentioned protein, and he's, because he picks up on things, and mm-hmm. and Leo's picked up on omega-3, which he doesn't understand at all, but he's heard me talking about it in some of my presentations, and he's like, omega-3, mommy, omega-3. But anyway, my point is that at some point I'm going to start saying to Luca, you know, when he's having his crackers and his cheese, I'm like, do you want your crackers? Do you want some protein with those crackers? Just so that I can start introducing those ideas,
right.
And so he can see how, you know, the way that I've modeled it all these years is around mm-hmm. the idea of having at least a couple of macronutrients in there for satiety, etc.
Right.
So, you know, he's coming to the age, you know, around 11 or 12, I'd say they're ready to start being introduced to all of that. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I think that just emphasizes so many different areas of parenting. We model things. And then at some point, then we're going to get to a place where they're going to want to know why it is that they're doing it. And then that's when they start to get to an age where they can really understand the concepts, then we can start to teach them why. So they wonder, well, why do we always have meat at dinner? You know, when they're young, they don't even question it. When they're super young, especially, they just eat it. And then as they get older, hopefully they'll be asking questions. Well, why do we always have meat with dinner? Why can't we just have bread? Oh, well, because of, and you talk about protein, and that can be when fat and carbohydrate and those things come up, and you can explain the benefits of protein, the benefits of carbohydrate, and those kinds of things. And then now they can start to connect. Oh, okay. Well, that's why you've been having me do this all the time. Just like when a kid, we teach them to clean up their room, and when they're young, they don't understand why they have to do it. But then as they get older, they understand, oh, well, having a clean house, it's nice, it's relaxing. It also is teaching me about how to do a good job and how to work hard and accomplish a task, and you know, all those different things carry over. And so just like with any area of life, I think nutrition is another area where sometimes you have to model it first. Well, you definitely do. You have to model it first. And then at some point, then you can start to teach the why it is that we're doing that.
It's what we call in teaching as well. You've got to find that zone of proximal, you know, it's that point where they've kind of modeled it, they've seen it,
mm-hmm.
to the point where they can then become independent. So it's we got skill,
right.
The zone of proximal development. Yeah?
Yeah.
So it's like getting that right point where they can kind of be independent with it. And
yeah.
I also, a massive part of that and what you've touched on there is about how doing that, we're teaching it in context, you know, mm-hmm. teaching it abstract outside of context. Like I said, with Leo, he was given a sheet with some picture of some chicken,
right.
milk. It's just totally out of context. Whereas when, like you said, we're talking about the food that's on their plate as they're eating it, it's in context. It
right.
makes sense, you know, and this is something, you know, you've got to teach things in context. This is the other reason why, you know, coaching, you know, with adults, it's so mm-hmm. you know, trying to teach my clients certain things when they haven't experienced them or they're not experiencing them. that's when I find I have the most impact, is when literally an experience will happen and you as a nutritionist can understand why that's happening. Like, you know, about if a client is comfort eating or overeating, mm-hmm. it's not until they actually tell you about an experience that you can say, right, had it this morning with a client, you know, we know why that happened because XYZ is happening, so then we can move on. But do you know what I mean? It's talking about it in context rather than
exactly.
abstract. And it's also why, if you Google, well, you know, you can Google things as much as you like, but until you're seeing it happen in real life, it doesn't stick.
Yeah, that's a great point. Well, I think that's a good way to kind of wrap things up for our discussion today on this. And so I think this was a really good discussion. Hopefully our listeners got some good insight out of that. And you know, my hope through this, and I know your hope through this also, is that parents will start to really think about, be intentional about how we're helping our kids to understand the food that they're eating and these concepts, and understand how they can better get their kids to make these changes and in such a way that's going to have a long-term lasting effect on their life, and not just the ability to answer questions correctly on a test, or that kind of thing, you know. And I think sometimes that whole concept in education can carry over into all these other areas in ways where now, you know, food is not, what they're learning about food is not practical and applicable. It's more fact-based, and that just isn't particularly helpful.
No, exactly. And that's why we were saying, you know, teaching it as it's happening, teaching food is so much more meaningful. Yeah, so great. Well, thanks, Jeff. I've enjoyed that, as usual.
Yep, thank you all for listening. And of course, as always, if you have any questions at all, or if you think you might like to work with one of us in some capacity, all our contact information is in the show notes for all of these episodes. And we look forward to sharing another great discussion with you next week.